what is Nibbana? A talk given by Venerable K. Sridhamananda Mahanayaka Thera, Buddhist Temple, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
In every religion, there is an ultimate aim or final goal. Nibbana or Nirvana is the ultimate aim of Buddhism. But this Nibbana is the most difficult religious term for an ordinary man to understand. However, the Buddha has explained that Nibbana is the unborn, unoriginated, unmade and unconditioned. Further, he explains it, when in deep silent hours of thought to the truth the holy sage attains, then is he free from joy and pain, from the form and formless, where water, earth, heat, air, no footing found. There burns no lighting stars, nor shines the sun. The moon shed not her radiant beams, but the form of darkness is not there. This explanation of Nibbana may not be up to the satisfactions of some who have been dreaming about Nibbana and confused their minds. But we must understand that the world is nothing and Nibbana is something. The world is unreal, Nibbana is real. The world is a dream, Nibbana is an awakened state. The world is darkness, Nibbana is brightness. That is why the Buddha has introduced it, Nibbanam Paramam Sukham. Nibbana is the supreme bliss or the ultimate aim of our life. Permanent coolness. Relaxation from the burning defilement, highest achievement of our life. According to the Buddha, Nibbana is the supramundane state of bliss, which is the end of all our physical and mental sufferings and unsatisfactoriness. It is the culmination of spiritual maturity. Buddhist scholars have tried to explain Nibbana by using various words such as tranquility, unshaken, the cessations of sorrow, destructions of desire, cessations of all karmic activities, emancipation, deliverance, liberation, salvation, end of craving, the state of perfect purity, the supreme, the unchanging, the imperishable, blissful state, everlasting happiness, ambrosia, safety, refuge, protection, and peace. None of these words can convey the real meaning of Nibbana because all the words in our vocabulary refer only to mundane objects and experiences. We do not have enough words to explain this supramundane state. By whatever words we use to introduce Nibbana, we merely create some imaginations in our mind. The mental picture of Nibbana takes different forms according to the understanding capacity of the teachings of the Buddha. Therefore, words can only give us a very vague idea of Nibbana. Although we try to understand the real nature of Nibbana, we do not have the experience of this bliss. We know that a blind man cannot understand the nature of color and light, but he cannot deny their existence. Likewise, an ordinary man can only try to imagine what Nibbana is. Here is another simile. In Malaysia, there is a nice and very tasty fruit called durian. Can people who have never tasted durian experience what sort of taste comes from the durian fruit? They cannot. They can only imagine that durian is of good taste. Likewise, without having experienced Nibbana, we can only imagine that Nibbana is a very blissful state. Students in primary school may try to understand advanced scientific theories, but they will not understand these scientific theories simply by talking about them. If they continue their education, then one day they will be able to understand such advanced subjects. Likewise, we cannot understand Nibbana simply by talking about it. But if we make the effort, then our understanding of Nibbana will gradually grow. Those who have experienced Nibbana are most qualified to explain what it is. Yet others cannot understand what they talk about. The fish who always lives in the water can understand the nature of the water, but he cannot understand the nature of the land. But the turtle who lives in the water and on the land can understand the nature of both the water and the land. Likewise, an ordinary man who is bound only to worldly things cannot understand the nature of Nibbana. The ordinary man is like the fish, the saint is like the turtle. Some educated Buddhists have tried to explain the concept of Nibbana within their knowledge. Many other scholars, both Buddhist and non-Buddhist, have also given different opinions and explanations. Some Buddhist scholars in different schools hold different views about Nibbana. Some have misinterpreted Nibbana as eternalism or immortality. They try to explain Nibbana by drawing parallels with paradise or heavens of other religions, because without introducing it in that manner, to many people, Nibbana is meaningless. Their purpose is introducing Nibbana as a paradise is just to attract the masses towards Nirvana and to convince them of its validity. The idea of Nibbana as a heaven or everlasting happiness is very appealing to those who have created a need to live in everlasting happiness from the worldly sense. However, the Buddha's way of introducing Nibbana may disappoint many who are clinging to worldly things. According to him, the worldly things are uncertain and Nibbana alone is certain. Some scholars try to introduce Buddhist Nibbana not as the destructions of the idea of self, but as the absorption of the small self into the great self. Those who have studied the real teachings of the Buddha can understand that this is a misinterpretation, because According to the Buddha, there is no such entity as the small or great self. The word self had been used in the English language for the word Atta in the Pali language. Atta means personality or person, used by the Buddha as conventional terms, but not used for the self that is accepted by other religionists. When we say you look after yourself, it does not refer to the idea of self, but a person. When we define the word self from the Buddhist point of view, we can find it is only a stream of ideas or imaginations incorporated with illusions and egoism. The belief in this self strengthens man's selfish ideas, and this strong egoism is the main cause of man's various mental disturbances. Therefore, we must first try to eliminate this concept of the self. To some people, nirvana is nothingness, but they use this word nothingness by measuring nirvana from the worldly point of view. To some others, it is annihilation. The Buddha said, it is only in one sense true that he teaches annihilation, that is, the annihilation of desire, aversion, and delusion, the annihilation of all bad state of mind. The similar answer can be given to those who say that Nibbana is nothingness. That is, after attaining Nibbana, there is nothing to worry, nothing to suffer, nothing to disappoint, nothing to fight, nothing to be afraid, nothing to hate, nothing to bluff, nothing to crave, nothing to worry about past, present, and the future of life. When Nibbana is introduced only at the end of rebirth, then very easily people take it as nothingness. But the Buddha did not accept nothingness. The Buddha has taken enormous troubles and gone through so much of suffering to discover Nibbana. How can we say that he has taken so much of trouble just to introduce nothingness? Nibbana is not to be understood as nothingness, but no thing. Nothing means complete annihilation. No thing means free from anything mundane, because every mundane thing is changeable. Sir Edwin Arnold, in his Light of Asia, says, if any teach Nirvana is to cease, say unto such they lie. If any teach Nirvana is to live, say unto such they err. Some are under the impression that Nibbana is a place. Such people think that Nibbana exists on a particular planet in the universe where they can go after their death and enjoy everlasting worldly pleasures. Nibbana is beyond any plane of existence, beyond any mundane world, beyond any world system in this ocean of birth and death. The Buddha has pointed out that there are 31 planes of existence but none of these places are free from impermanency. They are within the cycle of birth and death. If this is so, then how can we find real happiness either in human world or in paradise or even in Brahma realm? Nibbana exists everywhere, but we have to produce Nirvana just as fire must be produced through certain conditions. And just as fire is not stored up anywhere, Nibbana also is not stored up anywhere. Then the question, what is after Nirvana, is meaningless, because if there is anything after Nirvana, that cannot be Nirvana but something else. If Nibbana is not a place, then the question arises, where do the Buddhas and Arahantas go after their death? Those who have attained Nibbana can be compared to a flame of an oil lamp that goes out when the wick and oil are finished. But what is compared to the blown out flame is not Nirvana, it is the person who realizes Nirvana who is blown out. A Sanskrit scholar explained that in this way. As the flame on extinction neither goes to the earth nor to the sky, nor to this direction nor to that, but ceases to burn due to exhaustions of oil, so the wise one on attainment of Nirvana neither goes to the earth, nor to the sky, nor to this direction, nor to that, but attains only peace due to the eradications of defilements. Then, where is Nirvana? Look to the mind for the answer. The Buddha said that Nibbana exists in the religious or holy man's mind. Nibbana is within you, not outside. Then you will be able to find out Nibbana. You cannot discover it through sensual thinking, but spiritual or psychological perceiving can discover it. Nibbana cannot be conceived, but can be perceived and realized. Perceiving is direct seeing. Nirvana is beyond the space and time. It is free from worldly condition. The Buddha said that the world, the origin of the world, the end of the world, and the path leading to the end of the world can all be found within this body. Here, the world means suffering and the end of the world means Nibbana. According to the Buddha, suffering and the end of suffering, Nirvana, both arise within the body. Nibbanic bliss can be experienced while living in this world. The term parinibbana is used to describe the same Nibbanic bliss after the physical body has passed away or dissolved into the elements, without the need for another physical body or another rebirth. The difference between Nibbana and Parinibbana can also be explained in this way. There are two stages of Nibbana. The first is Saupadisesa Nibbana, the Nibbana attained in this very life, with mind and body, are still present. But with the actions made through the quenching of desire, the second is Anupadisesa Nibbana, the ultimate Nibbana after the death of the Buddha or Arahantas. Some like to associate Nibbana with the pleasures of the senses. Such people misinterpret Nirvana. They do not realize that to attain Nibbana, we must be free from the pleasures of the senses. The Nibbanic bliss arises only after the passions and senses have been calmed down. Nibbanic bliss is the supreme bliss because it is not a kind of happiness that is experienced by the senses. It is a kind of happiness that is experienced by uprooting the senses and cutting all attachments. Here, what the Buddha has said about worldly pleasures and the attaining of sainthood. More than any earthly power, more than all joys of heaven, more than rule over all the world, is the entrance to first stage of sainthood, Sotapanna. Nibbana is a state of mind where man can find peace and bliss without any burden. The feeling, sensation and pleasures we gain in this world of our senses are not permanent. Since these pleasures are so changeable, how can we find real happiness through them? To attain Nibbana, we have to keep away from too much of indulgence of worldly pleasures. Day and night, we are working like slaves in order to please our senses. But these senses never get satisfaction, and that is why we cannot find real happiness. Many people have not yet realized the difference between pleasure and happiness. Pleasure can be gained through indulging the five senses. This pleasure is temporary, but the real happiness must be obtained by calming the senses and removing the defilements from the mind. Worldly pleasure is like a little bit of relief that a man gets who is suffering from a skin disease while scratching his body. But that scratching aggravates the situation and he experiences more pain at the next moment. The happiness that a holy man experiences in Nibbana is like the happiness of this man who could manage to get rid of his sickness completely, but it is difficult for him to explain the nature of that happiness to others. Nibbana in the Pali language and Nirvana in the Sanskrit language. Ni meaning departure. Vana means craving. Therefore, Nirvana is the departure from craving. Nibbana is also interpreted as an unconditioned state. Nibbana is known as Asankata Dhatu, the absolute, unconditioned state beyond the range of material being. free from any of the phenomena of sankhara or sankhata, which refers to three characteristics of every component, mundane thing. Everything comes into existence, upada, exists, sthiti, and passes out of existence, bhanga. Asankhata means free from coming into existence, free from existence, and free from passing out of existence. Therefore, Nibbana is unconditioned. The unconditioned is the only reality, and all conditioned things are empty and unreal, just arising and passing away like bubbles of water. This realization is called the perfections of wisdom. One who is blind to the ever-present reality of the unconditioned, blind to the true nature of things. In the unconditioned, there is no time, neither death, nor birth, neither coming, nor going, neither arising, nor passing away, neither inner, nor outer, neither this world, nor another world. But in the eyes of an enlightened holy man, that the world is empty and unreal. He is the one who sees the end of the world where there is neither birth, nor old age, nor death. He knows with unshakable certainty. This is the complete liberation of the mind from all unsatisfactoriness and delusion. Without having reached the end of the world, in that sense, the Buddha says, one cannot reach the end of suffering. The Buddha did not believe that man can attain his final salvation through the influence of divine power, miraculous power, mystical power, magical power, or self-torture, but through moral development, mental culture, and mind purification. The journey to Nibbana is a very long one. It is not easy for a man to attain Nibbana at once. Even one lifetime is not sufficient without previous preparation. He must be prepared to complete the journey, and the preparation can extend over many lifetimes. The correct path to Nibbana is a gradual development. Step by step, we have to slowly reduce our human weaknesses and bad habits and develop our mind until we attain this final goal. If we wish to make this journey to Nirvana, we must learn to be self-reliant. The Buddha rejected this belief that man can attain salvation by praying to anybody, even though it has held in the minds of people for thousands of years. So, we cannot wait for someone to come and take us to Nibbana. We have to work for that. The Buddha says, we can attain Nibbana without animal sacrifices, without torturing our body in the name of religion. Mere faith in the Buddha or God, rites and rituals, and certain religious traditions and customs, they are not the important aspect. for our salvation. Not even the deep knowledge of the Dhamma itself does help to gain that Nibbana. Knowledge itself cannot clean the mind. During the Buddha's time, many uneducated people gained Nibbana only through the purifications of their mind. When the mind is purified, the knowledge can be gained and a clear vision arises. Eradications of the roots of the evil thought is the most important aspect for that. The Buddha has also pointed out that we cannot attain Nibbana by relying on mundane merit. Such merits are important only to give us temporary worldly pleasures in the mundane world. But such merits do not necessarily increase our spiritual progress on the way to Nibbana.